Senate Revenue Committee Agenda, February 9th, 1981, 1:30 p.m., Hearing Room 137. Senate Bill 65 clarifies definition of federal income tax as applicable to State Personal Income Tax Act. Senate Bill 68 create warrant procedure for unpaid timber taxes. Senate Bill 106 change interest rate on Department of Transportation certificates of indebtedness.
The committee will come to order. We have three bills on the agenda. Again, for the benefit of those in the audience who may be terrified by bills coming up for hearing this early, we're not trying to ramrod anything through and final action on anything where people have concerns about is not contemplated. So we're simply going to have hearings on these bills. I've received some phone calls from people about the agenda who fear that there's some secrecy in running things through, and it's certainly not the intent of the committee and won't be operating that way. Okay, Senate Bill 65. Do you want to explain it, Ron, or should we have Ira explain it?
Well, we'll just be repeating each other.
Hey, Ira.
So, as we have to come up, there is a revenue impact for this.
Ira, do you want to, do you have somebody with you? You want to bring up?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Okay. I'd like to bring up Sue Martinez with the Audit Department of the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Ira W. Jones, Assistant Attorney General in the Tax Division of the Department of Justice, here representing the Department of Revenue. And with me is Mrs. Sue Martinez, Auditor for the Department of Revenue. Senate Bill 65 is probably about as close as you can ever get to a housekeeping bill that the Department of Revenue will ever put in.
I mean, that's almost, telling us that, it almost kills the bill before you start.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Ira has not been party to this committee's former conversations, and it's highly unfair for us to tell him what's going to happen to his bill.
Yeah, that's terrible, Ira.
I think I understand your meaning, because I think I've said some other bills were housekeeping bills, and it turned out to have some significant items in them. This is almost a housekeeping
bill. The bottom line was last session when he said House Bill 2540 was a housekeeping bill.
Senator McFarland's benefit, but the use of that term is not sexist.
I see. I appreciate that.
You keep them on their toes.
Go ahead, Ira.
Mr. Chairman, I think probably the best way to do is to go through the bill just section by section, giving you what it does, because the sections are kind of unrelated as far as talking the bill as a whole. One of the things that recently came up about the time we were drafting this bill, in fact, it was after the bill was practically drafted and almost ready for a pre-session introduction, that somebody asked a question, and they said, say, in the definition of taxes for Social Security purposes and for certain other purposes under the Internal Revenue Code, they're classed as, quote, income tax, end of quote. Why aren't they deductible on the state return as well as what we normally think of those income taxes that we pay with our federal income tax return? And I remember somebody called on the phone, and I said, well, gee, they've never done that before. I'm sure there must be a good reason. Well, they said, we can't find any. We're going to send one over to you. Going to send a question over. I started looking at the law, and I realized why my answer was the way that it was. When the state of Oregon passed the Income Tax Act of 1929, this same question arose in 1936, and to that was added a provision that said that taxes, contributions, and other payments paid by employees in pursuance of federal laws relating to Social Security taxes are not income taxes under this law. And as we got self-employment taxes, that was added on. As we got some railroad retirement, that was added on. And this continued up through the Income Tax Act of 1953 and was in there. Clearly, these taxes were not deductible.
Okay,
but when the Income Tax, Personal Income Tax Act of 1969 was enacted, this prohibition was not put in. Why? I don't know. It just was left out.
Okay, Ira, now, so we're all clear on exactly what kind of income you're talking about. The bill summary says, for the purposes of gain upon sale of residential property.
Well, that,
yes,
that's
section
another section. That's a later
okay.
section.
But you're talking about actual...
actual deduction on okay. the state income tax return okay. of these taxes. And therefore, ORS 316.072 is amended in this bill to add a subsection 5. Now, 316.072 defines what are personal income taxes and how they're to be deducted on the return and so on, as provided in another section. And so we add a subsection 5 here that says, for purposes of this chapter, meaning chapter 316, federal income tax does not include the following: taxes, contributions, or other payments paid by employees in pursuance of federal laws relating to Social Security, railroad retirement, unemployment compensation, or old age benefits. And then B, taxes paid pursuant to the Self-Employment Contribution Act, subtitle A, Chapter 2, Internal Revenue Code of 1954. Now, you may think, well, gee, you get one inquiry, that's kind of too bad. But I tell you, gentlemen, that if this bill is not passed, I'm going to attend a hearing later on this month, and if this bill is not passed, the director of the Department of Revenue is going to have to say, yes, Mr. Taxpayer, you can deduct these taxes.
Well, I think legally right now, from what you just described,
you've been doing
an illegal act since 1969, not allowing that.
Well, nobody's deducted them.
Okay.
No, nobody brought up the question to
them. That's a shame. Can we go retroactive?
That's what, when we get back, yes, that's what we're doing.
It is, to 79.
H&R Block says, you know, 3 years.
I don't think that's too bad. That's interesting.
Well, the amendments of this bill, or the effective date of the amendments, is going to try to take care of it, so you can't go retroactive, Mr. Chairman. We'll get to that later. Okay, the second amendment is contained in Section 2, which is an amendment to 316.109. In the 1979 regular session, the Department of Revenue, the legislature decided that for purposes of computing gain on personal residence, we wanted to get exactly in step with the federal. If the federal didn't tax the gain, then Oregon wouldn't tax the gain, regardless of whether you bought your house inside of Oregon, outside of Oregon, or whatever. And similarly, if that gain became taxable on the federal and the person were in Oregon at that time, he would become taxable in Oregon on the same basis. And in the bill that was passed by the legislature, it just talked about the basis of the property for purposes of this chapter shall be the same as the basis for federal income tax purposes. After you fellows went home about a week, somebody said, hey, there's a lot of things that happen to basis. Basis is just the initial purchase of the property. There can be additions and this sort of thing. Don't you really mean adjusted basis? And about that time, I said, yes, we did mean adjusted basis. And so before we get into some kind of a case or somebody wants to construe the law to mean differently than what the legislature intended, we are bringing to you the fact that adjusted should be added before basis in subsection 1 of 316.109. And even the tax court, in the opinion of the case that was decided during the last session of the legislature, there was tax court just talked in terms of general basis rather than adjusted basis. So it's not something that it's something can be easily overlooked. In section 3, besides making a few of the changes for to get rid of any sexual connotations as far as him or her or so on, we remove those. But the primary purpose of bringing this up is on line 25 on page 2, you'll notice that we've changed section 26A of Title 49 of the Internal Revenue of the United States Code to sections 1512 and 11504. During the last 2 years, Congress has completely organized this section of the United States Code, and these are the proper sections that deal with common carriers. The other change is that we have deleted the language, or urging that the language be deleted, in lines 37, 38, 39, and 40. This was a provision that you had as far as necessity to withhold or not withhold from certain employers who were engaged in in some kind of phase of motion picture production or television production or television commercials under certain circumstances. And this was to apply only after July 1, 1970 and before July 1, 1975. That time's expired. That language is obsolete. It's time we take it out. Subsection 4 on the next page, lines 6, 7, and 8, refers to the requirement to make applications to get this exemption from the withholding tax provisions. And that, too, should also come out. Section 4 has to do again with really the changing of reference in line 35 on page 3. You'll see there that 733-180 is now 733-220. Again, as new sections are added and renumbered and so on and so forth, occasionally we have to get in and make those kinds of changes. And then Section 5 amends ORS 317-225 again to take out some obsolete references of material that has been repealed. And so since 317-250 does no longer appear in the code and it has been repealed, then you had to talk about 317-249 is the last one that you wanted to refer to. Also, in Section 6, we have deleted certain sections. One is ORS 118.490. That has to do with, in the gift and inheritance tax laws, that talks about compensation of a personal representative. And it's obsolete language. All of that is presently provided in the new probate code in ORS 116.173, and there could be a very great conflict between the two sections unless this one is repealed. ORS 119.025 merely provided that certain sections of Chapter 119 applied to gift taxes for 1959 and later years. Well, again, that section is superfluous, so we're asking that that be repealed. ORS 119.510 authorizes the Department of Revenue to prescribe administrative rules for gift tax laws, and it already has general provisions to provide rules under ORS 305-100 for any types of taxes that it administers, and therefore, again, that section is useless and should be repealed. ORS 305-210 deals with the service of process and subpoenas by the director of the Department of Revenue when he finds it necessary, which he finds necessary to issue in an administration of the tax laws. It provides that all such service be performed by the county sheriff. And this not only imposes a burden on the counties, but it also adds to the cost of tax administration and in some instances delays enforcement procedures. The general law of service of process and subpoenas is found in the Code of Civil Procedures and provides for service by the party requesting it or by any other person over 18 years of age. And in those sections, there's detailed instructions as to directions in the law as to how the service is to be accomplished and everything, and there just doesn't seem to be any reason why that we should have 305.210 specifically in this section when it's already covered by the general law and in some cases kind of conflicts with the general law. And we could still go ahead and use the general provisions that are under the general statute, so we don't feel that it is has any need to be in the tax statutes particularly. Now, Mr. Chairman, on Section 7, it has kind of a peculiar applicability date. You notice that the first sentence says that the amendments to 316072 by Section 1 of the Act apply to all tax returns open to auditor adjustment on the effective date of the Act, of this Act. Mr. Chairman, we're asking that this language be put in so Senator Day and myself and some others will not immediately start filing amended returns.
I promise that. Yeah, I'm working on mine right now, and you're going to get it. Hell, it's legal.
But anyway, to stop any provision, I would like to have made this retroactive to January 1, 1969, which was when the Personal Income Tax Act of 1969 was passed, but I didn't think that you'd necessarily go for that. So this would really keep the revenue without changing from what it is, and then all tax returns that have been filed that who are no longer open for auditor adjustment, they would be completely closed, and we wouldn't have any problem that way. But it would also, as I say, take care of the conference or the hearing that I'm going to be present at later on this month. The second sentence says that the amendments to 316-109 by Section 2 of the Act shall apply to taxable years beginning on and after January 1, 1979. And that has to do with the adjusted basis of property, that is, of personal residences that are sold in Oregon, so that will go back to the same date as the effective date of your 1979 amendment. So there would be no question, but everybody that would apply to.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question?
Senator Day?
Ira. Could someone legally really go back and ask for a refund if they chill on all their tax returns back 11 years? Really?
No.
1 year maybe?
If you did nothing. Then you could apply for, you probably would want to make the amendment applicable to tax years beginning on and after January 1, 1981. But if you did that, then you could go back for 3 years. In other words, you could for 1980, 1979, and 1978 for a refund. But beyond that, you really can't.
That's why I was wondering why you're asking. The only reason you'd be asking is if you still have a disputed account open with some taxpayer that you're in the courts on.
Right. Well, the only one that I know of, I think, is for tax year 1979. That
okay. So for all practical reasons, if we put it back 3 years, it'd be satisfactory.
This language will catch everything that.
But if we didn't use 79 and used it back 3 years, it'd be satisfactory. Is that right?
Well, we could. Yeah.
What you're trying to do is correct the fact that was not acting within the confines of the law back to 79. That's the only reason you want it back there, isn't it?
Well, the main reason is that there's millions of taxpayers out there who filed returns using the definitions that we've used for years, made the deduction, and that unless they think of it, they're not going to file their amended returns. And so I'd like to stop everybody who can file amended returns on the effective date of this act to be placed in the same position. That's really what I'm saying.
As far as fiscal impact, the most fiscal impact would be 3 years, including or 4 years counting this year, right? Really, of the returns being filed.
Right.
Senator Hammond.
Senator Day, finish.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
IRA, Section 1, line sub 5, line 24 and 25. You speak of taxes relating to Social Security and then a little later to old age benefit. What are these old age benefits other than Social Security? Is that
they're they're probably the same, but where you're using general terms, I wanted to make sure that if federal government came up with some other kind of act in the future that talked about old age benefits, that they wouldn't be able to slip it under this.
And what type of unemployment compensation would an employee be likely to pay to the feds?
I don't know that there is any now. I think at one time that there might have been. And whether that could be reactivated again, I don't know.
I think you mean workman's compensation. I think they do, but I could be wrong.
Well, I think that when unemployment compensation first started, way, 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 way back when, it's really before my time, but it seems to me like I remember reading something about it in some of the law review articles or something like that I have to get into about that time. I think there was a tax on employees. I can't remember. It was a very small amount, either a few pennies a day or something like that.
States very often have something like that.
Well, I was thinking the federal might too.
I can't recall over a good many years that an employee would pay directly to the feds. More years than I would like to mention.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hamlin, I'm sure what they're referring to is we've had a contribution from employees and workmen's compensation. These few cents have gone into the secondary injury fund and some other, and I think that's, I'd be willing to have $1,000.
To the state program.
Yeah.
Well, my concern was whether there's unnecessary language.
Well, that language might be unnecessary, Mr. Chairman, but I guess part of it was I took it out of what we omitted from the pre-1969 law, and this had been in there for a period of time. Now, I don't suppose you'd hurt anything by taking it out, but I can't guarantee that, you know, something might come in on unemployment compensation in the future.
Why do you speak only of employees? Is there no problem with employers?
Well, employers can deduct it anyway as a deduction in the business expense, so there's no problem there. It's just employees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Now, Mr. Chairman,
Ira, you said that your initial thought was to make this retroactive to 1969, so as to be sure and cover all of that. Can you do that constitutionally?
Yes.
You can. There's no such thing as a prohibition of ex post facto taxes.
No. We had a case about 10 years ago now. I don't know whether any of you still remember the Oregon's famous capital gains tax that was passed in 1965. At that time, there was a definition. There was always a question under that act as to whether short-term capital gains were to be treated the same as the federal or not. And finally, in 1967, it was decided, yes, the legislature did mean that all types of capital gains would be defined as the federal, defined them, amended the law, made it retroactive back to July 1, 1965. There was a taxpayer who filed his 1966 return and deducted it. Took a big deduction for short-term capital gains instead of restricting it to $1,000 because it was very unclear. The tax court had no problem of applying the legislature's retroactivity back there. It says, no, that's fine. No constitutional problem, either federal or state, because this was argued and briefed very thoroughly.
Okay.
Okay, are there other questions, Senator Terrell?
Just wondering, you say in Section 7 that you're going to make the provisions in ORS 316.72 apply on the effective date of this act. Is that time enough? shouldn't you maybe change the wording of that so that you could at least pick them up at January 1st of this year?
I don't think that we would gain anything if we wanted to make it back to a certain time period or something like that. I felt to make it open to returns that were open to audit adjustment would, it certainly takes care of anything that I know of that's pending right now. I think they'd be open for adjustment, so anything would be
limiting,
pending.
That's not limiting language so that it's only good for those that are open and not for future.
Oh, I see. It probably should say maybe on and after.
Yeah, because the way I read that, I only the ones you currently have would come under that, and as soon as you've processed those, then in the future, that subset, these amendments wouldn't apply to the law.
I see what you. I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
So you'll prepare something.
I'll prepare you an amendment for that. Yes, I have also another couple of things that came to light after the bill.
Senator Troll.
Yeah, I'm drafted. Still back on my point. It seems to me that that maybe from this point, when people have, let's say, suddenly realized it's possible to do that, until the effective date of the act, let's say it takes a month to get this act through both houses. Might do this.
Well, any person that would act to so that the return was still open to adjustment by an appeal or something like that, that would be open for an adjustment.
I see. So we've effectively taken care of that.
Ira, before we go on, now you said you're going to a hearing on this particular matter.
Yes.
Okay, it involves a taxpayer who's saying, I should be able to deduct these. Okay. Mm-hmm. So your message at the hearing of this taxpayer is going to be that the legislature is your undoing, that you're right, but this bill is on its way.
And I've already so notified him, and I said, gee, do we need to hold a hearing? And he says...
Well, that's the question. Why are you holding a hearing if he is right?
Because he's insisting on it. Well, you mean at this point...
Why don't you just write back and say you're right? But I've got a bill in. Why force the guy to a hearing?
Well, what I asked to do was, since his appeal can stay where it is, that I didn't feel we need to go for a hearing at this time to do that. That, in fact, that's why I wrote that. I said, okay, here's Senate Bill 65. I think this was the day that it came over having been printed, and according to that bill, you cannot deduct it.
Okay.
And he says, I still want a hearing.
Okay.
So that's why I'm going.
What is the, I guess my point was, the citizen's right now.
Right.
Okay. Then why is there a hearing necessary if you know the right, he's right, he knows this bill exists, it seems to me that wouldn't it go ahead and be processed as if he's right, and then if this bill passes, somebody notifies him that he was right and is no longer right.
Well, I suppose.
I mean, the point being, it seems to me that
okay, down on the administrative, farther down on the administrative level, the hearing officer of the, the conference officer of the department, I don't know whether he was even aware of the fact that the question had been asked and that we said, yes, there was a grave doubt. In fact, it's probably deductible. I don't know whether he was aware of it.
Okay, so he's denied of the belief.
And so now he's going up to the next level. I agree with you. I think it's too bad that I'm going to have to go to this hearing.
Well, it's going to be pretty tough to go to the floor, too, because one of the first questions we always get asked is, which court case or hearing is this resolved?
And so there is a hearing, and that's why I mentioned it, that we're at the department level. I didn't think there would... I hadn't even been aware of the fact that anybody had even taken this deduction when I drafted
what,
the bill.
What kind of revenue impact are we talking about? Do we know?
I estimated $50 million for a year, assuming that everybody isn't going to take advantage of filing amended returns. Yeah, there's a substantial amount. That's that.
I think we better fix these dates a little differently if it's got that kind of an impact. So that, I mean, if most taxpayers assume that this was already the law, I guess all of them minus one. And if, why couldn't they if you don't fix these dates to pertain to all 3 years?
Because, Mr. Chairman, you cannot amend a return more than 3 years after the date of filing.
Mm-hmm. But how about the last 3 years?
So,
are we going
back
to 79?
Well, those would all be open to audit,
not
open to adjustment. That's why I say we've got it covered.
Okay, Senator Day?
Well, I think what you're telling me, maybe I missed, but I don't see the emergency clause on this. Wouldn't you think you'd want an emergency clause?
I can't put an emergency clause.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You can't do it.
Well, but they're effective dates there.
Is that true? Are we raising? We're not.
That's relating to taxes.
That's relating to taxes.
Where does it
no
say?
Way.
Oh, okay, here it is. Relating to taxation. Okay, the other question in Section 6, you're taking away the requirement for a sheriff. That this is when they go to the treasurer to float something to get a project started. But I don't think that's right. Steve, we just started Senate Bill 106. Can you tell us in what way the Department of Transportation certificates, how they're used? Did they go to the bond market?
No, this isn't
the treasurer.
No. They can borrow from one of two places, either the state treasurer or a banking institution. This is not bond, as I understand it.
And currently, neither will give them the money for 6%, so that they can't borrow.
Neither would be required to.
Well, I don't think the treasurer could, since the statute tells him to get the
highest
or at least make a prudent investment, and a lending institution wouldn't because they would lose money. So, who's here? David Mooring from the State Highway Division.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll be very brief. The only change in this bill is the 6% to a negotiated rate. To my knowledge, we have never used this statute at all, but with revenues declining, I suppose there is a possibility that we might need to. As it is at the 6% today and what looks like the immediate future, we wouldn't be able to get any money at 6%. So that's what the bill is all about.
Senator Trump.
Yeah. I don't know what certificate of indebtedness are, so tell me, say you've never used it, but how could you use it?
Well, an example might be if we had a lot of work out for contract and the contractors suddenly all double shifted and we got to the end of the season, like October, and we were out of funds, probably the November, December, January, February income into the state highway fund would replenish. So in October, we could go to the state treasurer and borrow some money.
Borrow.
That's right.
Certificate of indebtedness is that you're borrowing temporarily,
right,
short period of time within the biennium, so that you're not carrying a debt from biennium to biennium.
I don't know that there would be any limit, but like I say, we've never had to use it. But
there would be a constitutional limit.
1 year. Yeah, it says the bill says.
Okay.
But, excuse me, Senator Trow, I still don't think they could go past the biennial date. I think you'd have to have unless it can technically be treated as a bond, which I don't think it can. Simply a loan, an indebtedness,
right,
which means you'd be spending over your budget, because there'd be no guarantee the legislature would continue your agency.
Well,
funding.
Okay, it would be more of a cash flow thing, mm-hmm. I think. By the end of the biennium, we could be very solvent.
But in the case you didn't, the legislature would have to appropriate.
That's right.
In case the Arabs cut off the oil and people had to quit driving and the funds didn't come in, the legislature would have to appropriate the money, or you'd be in violation. I remember, I think it was the first vote I made on the floor of the Senate was to bail the DEQ out of deficit. They had spent more money than they took in, and in 1975, one of the first bills we passed was an appropriation to balance their books for the biennium. Do you have any record of it ever being used?
No, I have no knowledge that we ever utilized it.
Senator Trump.
You're asking for it now and changing the rate from 6%, not an excessive 6% per year, to negotiated rate. Are you doing that because you think you might need to use it this year?
Well, this year, no, I don't think so.
Or in the near future?
I would hope not.
Okay, but you're rather confident that nobody would give you a loan for 6%. So that's what
you have to say.
Yes. Just in case, sometime down the line.
That's right.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. That's awkward. Senator Monroe?
Mr. Chairman, it appears to me that this committee ought to either, one, pass this bill, or two, repeal this section, because it's pretty obvious that the way it's written, it's worthless.
Do you know when it was put in the statute, Steve?
No, it says it has a 1969 date that's being changed, but
just an initial date. Well, there are times when cash flow is a problem, and the general fund borrowed this last year to meet expenses, and so I can see, otherwise I don't think this agency has any cash flow options. I'm not sure what the general status of an agency is. Maybe we should find out what, if they have options outside of this vehicle, say for emergency funding. I doubt that they do, because they have the e-board.
Yeah.
But
that's outside their budget.
Yeah.
Usually e-board monies are not, they're general fund monies, aren't they? Could be used here.
That's right. They're prohibited, and depending on the kind of project.
Mr. Chair, maybe my imagination went too far astray, but I think a situation could very easily exist where the transportation department had several contracts out, and let's say four, I don't know, fairly large ones, and the contract read, the contractor will receive full payment at time of completion of the project. And they had planned on maybe finishing those projects, let's say in May, but all of a sudden we had a nice open winter like we've had now, and those guys could just keep working and finish it before their money came in.
Yeah.
And they'd have to have the money, and they may not ever use it. This is just an emergency piece of legislation that's been on the books a while. Now they brought it up to date by putting in the negotiable rate instead of 6%, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, my only concern is that there appears to be no check outside of whether or not the lending institution or the treasurer would loan the money. That is, there's nobody here in a budgetary capacity
that has to give approval unless I have missed something. That's my concern. There's no limit on how much they can borrow, just the time that they can borrow it, right?
Well, they can't borrow more than their total budget.
Oh, $10 million. $10 million. Okay. Yeah.
Their budget is
right.
Not under this proposal. Well, yes, it would be.
Sure.
Yes, it would be.
Sure.
They still would have to be living within
right.
that.
You bet.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Monroe.
Another provision here that we might want to look at while we're looking at this is the 1 year on line 15 that they have a maximum 1 year maturity for these bonds, whether or not that really constitutes short term or not in the kind of context that we're thinking of, such as that context explained by Senator Jer said, whether that 1 year maybe is a little longer than, you know, when we're talking about them borrowing short term to meet a cash flow problem within the biennium, do they really need 1 year maturity in there? Or, you know, would 6 months or some other length of time, I don't know. I just thought it might be something to look at. Also, they can borrow money not only from the state treasurer, but also from any bank.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have to assume that before any bank or the state treasurer would loan them that money under those circumstances, that they would have to show evidence that the money will be there to pay back that. On the other hand, with respect to borrowing from a bank, you know, from the state treasurer, I have no problem, but borrowing from a bank, the bank, I suppose, would always know that if the money wasn't there, that the state would have to back them up somehow and maybe would have to come up with a special appropriation or have to do something. I don't know. I just question what kind of requirements a bank would make. It'd be a lot easier if this program had been used in the past so we'd have some basis to go on.
I'm sure that a bank would have some kind of an instrument that had plenty of attachments, probably about that mm-hmm. thick.
The
director would have to sign 85 times in blood. Would be my. I would imagine there's a way to attach state revenues because.
Well, that's what concerns me, the possibility of them indebting themselves greater than their revenues, and then us having the legislature having to bail them out somehow. I would be interested in hearing what some of our friends in the banking community have to say about under what circumstances they would make such a loan.
I don't think they could without any experience, but we can ask them.
Senator, I'm just wondering, too, about what happens if they have a year, according to the statutes, that the indebtedness shall mature within 1 year. What happens if they're right down at the end of the biennium and they still want to go this route?
I think that's the main question. I don't think so.
They couldn't do it.
Let's. Can we try to get council, legislative council, to clarify that? We'll get legislative council to do that. I think Senator Jernstedt's point is that they are still confined by the budget appropriated. They can't expend more than we've given them the authority to expend, and this expenditure would have to come within that. And I don't think they can. But your point is, can they cross? Can they go past July 1? I don't think so. But we're going to, let's ask legislative council that question
maybe
to make sure.
Need to
write that in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's already in effect, do they have rules and regulations developed already?
I don't think so because it's never been used. But.
Well, I know it hasn't been used, but they must, since it was already on the books.
Yeah. David, do you know of any rules established on how this was going to be handled?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Would the state treasurer have to be
No, it can be a bank. It says from the state treasurer or from any banking institution alone. So they don't have to act in concert.
When did this originally go on the books?
We don't know. It was amended in 69 or the 69 date to
probably
it.
Early 60s or before that.
You know, it probably was the early 60s, right after the budget crunch of the late 50s. Wasn't there a 59 special session or a special session right at the end of the 50s or early 60s dealing with budget?
I can't even remember the ones I sat through.
That's, well, as I understand it, Governor Hatfield, the last time the legislature was called into special session to cut budgets was in 59 or 60, when they had a shortfall greater than he could handle by across-the-board cuts.
There was one time, about 67, when they were, maybe they weren't called, well, I think they were because they put out a cigarette tax to the voters. So it must have been a special session to do that. A cigarette tax increase went out to the voters. So it must have been a special session. Wasn't there, Ken? A special session when you put out a cigarette tax to the voters?
I don't think that was in a special session. I think that regular.
Mr. Chairman,
okay.
We're talking about tightening this up. One thing that would make me feel a lot more comfortable with it would simply to be to require under any circumstance when this is used, approval by the state treasurer. That'd be one way to handle it. And then the state treasurer, as the state's chief fiscal officer, would be responsible for making sure that it was within their budget, that it was going to be paid off within the biennium, and so on, that everything was taken care of. Whether the state treasurer, in fact, made the loan or whether the loan was made to a bank required the approval of the state treasurer might be something that would be appropriate.
Yeah. Or would, yeah. Okay.
I don't know whether there'd be constitutional problems with doing that, transcending the governor's executive.
Well, that's it. Down here it talks about the executive department. We might have to go with the executive department.
Yeah. Okay.
But you want somebody.
Somebody. Yeah. Some check.
Okay. Could you look at that?
They still have to live within their budget.
Yeah. But I made a vote here in 1975 from one that was out of kilter, I can remember, and they were under. So it is possible, and I think the point being that these kinds of funds are somewhat volatile in these days. We could have an emergency that they think the revenues are declining now. Yeah. About the next time the plug's pulled out of the pump, they're really going to go down.
All you have to do is look at the basic information that was furnished us here. The stack structure, and you'll see where the gasoline revenue, it's interesting, has gone down almost $7 million.
Okay. There are three packets, three research reports in your packet. If I were you, I would take them with you for reading. They're going to be handed out to all members. One is just the basic tax information packet, some of which we've gone over, a comparative review of Oregon's tax structure, and the 1980 election results on the levies, that sort of thing. Three packets that you can use. One of them has, about halfway through, it tells you what different revenue options there are and how much they'll raise, that sort of thing. So these will go out to all members, and I wanted the committee to have them before we handed those out. Okay? So yeah, we'll be adjourned until tomorrow. Tomorrow is when we're having revenue in on this form.
Tomorrow?
Good.
No meeting today?
And if I'm not here, just go ahead on this. Because I've got a residual. Yeah, they are great.
We don't ever
meet. Something else.
What do you got going there?
No, I was just saying.
Local government, that's what needs to be.